Our next presenter is going to be Dr. Mike Malecki. He received his bachelor's in biochemistry and chemistry from the University of California, San Diego. He then went on to complete his doctorate in biological chemistry and molecular pharmacology at Harvard, where he was an American Heart Association predoctoral fellow. He is currently product director at Health Leaders Interstudy and Decision Resources, where he manages four product lines, interpreting primary survey, sales, and claims data to discern the market positioning of drugs now and in the future. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Malecki.
Minute, sorry. Wouldn't be a presentation if we didn't have at least one PowerPoint. There we go. One PowerPoint issue. Thank you for that introduction. Thank you for having me and for your attention today. I was going to briefly tell you about my job, but it seems like that's been done for me. As just a point of introduction, what I will tell you is just a brief summary about what Decision Resources and one of our sister companies, Health Leaders Interstudy, does. And that's that we do syndicated market research in the biopharmaceutical industry. So drug companies need to learn about what their market environment looks like. So that means what physicians feel about their drugs and what they need, what patients need, and what other companies are doing. And they do a lot of market research internally, and sometimes they look to external vendors such as Decision Resources or Health Leaders Interstudy, which is our office down in Nashville, in order to get a third-party opinion, an independent opinion. And so that's what our company does. And we have different product lines, which are basically research product lines. And that's about what I'll say about our company. If you have other questions, I'll be happy to answer them afterwards or what. But what I want to do is now talk a little bit about the pathway I took into my position at DR, which was my first job out of graduate school. So I titled the talk My First Job. Okay. So first, the reason I went to graduate school in the first place, as I mentioned, I did my undergraduate work at UC San Diego. I went to graduate school thinking that bench science was awesome and that that's what I wanted to do. And I thought this because when I was an undergrad, I did bench science and I had a reasonably successful undergraduate science career and I had a fantastic undergrad mentor who told me, apply to these schools, and then I got into what schools. She's like, okay, go to Harvard. And I did what she said. And great advice, really fantastic woman. And in the process, I learned a lot about research. But the problem is when you're an undergrad, you only have so many hours. And I did a lot of teaching, for instance, as well, and didn't have that much time when I was an undergrad to really get into the 60, 70-hour week research, which is much different than the summer having fun as an undergrad research. So when I got to graduate school, I thought, yeah, not so much. You see, I really wanted to be a faculty. I thought it'd be awesome to have my own lab. You get to determine what you work on, and it sounded really, really interesting. And then I saw what they had to go through, and there are a lot of reasons that that didn't work for me. I understand why people do it. I'm happy that they do it. They go into academia, or frankly, bench work in industry as well. We could chat afterwards offline if you're interested in knowing the details of why I didn't want to. So I basically then thought, okay, well, what do I like doing, and what do I want to do with that? And I knew I liked money, and that doesn't just mean a bank account. It means when I was in journal club, for instance, I would think, okay, well, what does this mean, and how is this going to impact a product or people? What are you going to do with this in order to make money out of it, for instance? Or I just sort of, I knew I was a little different than other people there, and I go ahead and reason with myself that it must be the money that does it. So I thought, okay, well, I want to go into business. And to be perfectly honest with you, some of that also comes from my mom. She has an MBA, and being her age, she was like one of two women, in her MBA class. And that was a big deal. And she raised me saying, oh, yeah, MBA is great, MBA is great. But I did not want to go to more school. Forget it. I admire you for doing that. After grad school, I was done. So I thought, okay, well, what can I do to get into business but not go and do more school? And there are a few options, patent law being one of them, or tech transfer, a lot of these types of options. I think the option I most seriously considered and considered for the longest before thinking DR was management consulting. A few things I liked about management consulting. The pay is awesome. No one will dispute that. And the other thing I knew that about myself was I really liked learning about a lot of different stuff. I didn't like learning a lot about one little bit of stuff. And that's the whole thing about PhD. You're an expert in a really small slice. So I wanted to be a generalist. And that's something that really drew me to consulting. And I very seriously considered it. But for me, for where my life and my lifestyle, consulting just wasn't going to work. The major two reasons were I did not want to work 90, 100 hours a week. I've been there, done that, not so much. I didn't want to be traveling 4 days a week. And most of the big management consulting firms where you really get a really deep experience with a specific client, although it's a broad topic area, you really have to travel a lot. I'm married, I love my wife, love my dogs, I like seeing them, and I just didn't want to be on the road that much. So I looked for something that was a little bit different. And it turns out I learned about decision resources. And just as management consulting firms recruit like hell at Harvard, decision resources also recruits like hell up there. And that's because we're based in Boston. And as it turns out, we have an enormous number of PhDs in our office, and an enormous number of them happen to come out of the Harvard and MIT system. So it's just a matter of knowing friends, as it turns out. And that's an important lesson, I think, to keep in mind, that the way you're going to get from point A to point B, a lot of times it's a matter of who you know. Sometimes it's just dumb luck that you happen to know somebody who happens to know somebody, and timing, of course, plays a big role of it. But your environment and the environment that you set up with your network really plays a big role. I want to back up one thing. When I was in graduate school, one of the important experiences that I had was I took a course at Harvard Business School. It was a course not for business students, but it was for PhDs in the graduate school. And it was taught by business school professors, and all the students were PhDs. And it was sort of a broad class, a case study class, but broad industry topics. We had one week on finance and one week on Porter's Five Forces and these different business topics. That I thought was incredibly interesting. And when I took that course, I was absolutely hooked. Because what was interesting to me with that was I was able to take the way I was thinking and my thought process and problem-solving process and apply it to a different type of problem. That's what I decided I wanted to do, and that's how I knew I wanted to do business. As it turns out, it was incredibly helpful to do that, because when I started applying for jobs, having that on my resume tells employers I have some idea of what I'm getting myself into. Not just, I want to make more money, or I want out, anything to get me out of here. I know what I'm kind of getting into, kind of, sort of, and you're not taking as much of a gamble on me. That's absolutely huge. Back to the decision resources. I met some people at Decision Resources initially at a career fair when they were recruiting. The first guy I met there was this guy named Jason Labonte. He happens to be our chief operating officer now, and that name will come up again in a minute, I promise. And he was telling me about these groups of Decision Resources where people are therapeutic area experts. And so you might be the oncology expert or the major depression expert or whatever it might be, and I decided I was not interested. I didn't want to be an expert on one thing. I wanted to be a generalist, and I politely but nevertheless blew him off at this career fair and instead went and talked to the DR consultants, because there's about 10% of our corporate revenue, at least, and probably about staff as well, is in our consulting group. So I thought, I'll work with these consultants. This is interesting. They do consulting-type work. They just don't travel a lot. So that's maybe the balance I'm looking for. Instead of the McKinsey BCGs of the world, I could find a smaller firm. I did that, and then I met some more consultants and a guy named Kurt Cannon, who was in our consulting group and now works for Genzyme. And Kurt was a fantastic mentor to me. He offered me a lot of help, a lot of advice. The biggest piece of advice that he offered me, and I'll share with you now, is that when you're applying for a job, being able to start within 6 weeks is equivalent in the business world to when you're applying for a postdoc, having your own funding. So I was talking to him in maybe November, and I knew I wasn't going to defend until about May, so it was way too early to talk to him. And that's why he told me that advice. And I definitely find it true. And the experiences I've had hiring people into DR, those who are willing to and able to start more soon are at a huge advantage, because most companies do not do a hiring cycle, an annual cycle. Most of them hire as needed. So they're looking for somebody now or more often yesterday or 2 months ago, and they really need that person. So I kept in contact with Kurt. He said, look, call me back in a few more months when you're about ready to defend, and we'll look and see what we have. And so I did, which is another lesson that I want to share with you, and that's that if somebody is offering to help you and says, call me back, call them back. It sounds really trivial to say, but I've offered my help to people, and then they'll call me back. And, like, what's going on? And I see on LinkedIn or on Facebook, they're still looking for a job months later. I'm like, remember how we talked? I'm not going to then proactively reach out to them. I've given them their opening, and if they're not going to take it, that's that. Pay close attention to advice mentors give you. They're not doing it for any reason other than that they want to help. I can tell you that I am incredibly grateful to Kurt, and still a friend of his today, for helping me out. And I just want to pay it forward to the next 10 people if I can do it, because that meant so much to me to find a job. And I think that's probably how my fellow panelists and other speakers here feel as well. So reach out. So I call him back a few months later. I say, okay, Kurt, I'm going to be defending pretty soon. What do you guys have open? And he said, oh, we don't have anything in consulting. I was like, oh, great. Here's this guy who I met. I worked on this great relationship, and they just didn't have anything. That's sort of a bummer. He said, well, let me see what else we have going on. And I'm thinking, oh, great, this is that guy again telling me about these reports that I don't want to write. And Kurt said, well, there's this group called New Products, and they're hiring somebody. I go, well, New Products, what's that mean? And he told me about the group. And basically, it's a generalist group, so that works. And they're responsible for working across multiple therapeutic areas, all therapeutic areas, really, at Decision Resources, which means all of the major therapeutic areas in terms of dollars and pharmaceutical spending. They were responsible for developing a new product, bringing it to market, meaning a new market research product. So there's an opportunity there for a heck of a lot of creativity and innovation and independence. And I thought, well, that sounds really interesting. It's kind of Wild West-ish, and that's kind of my style. And so I said, okay, well, how do I learn more about this? And, Kurt submitted my application, .. When I applied, got the job. One of the directors of the group, yeah, Jason Labonte, the guy I totally blew off earlier on. Turns out he didn't remember that. Okay, so the lesson with this is a couple of things. One, always be polite. I can't even tell you how important that is. I've seen people get, like, testy and rude at recruiting events. It's not worth it. He might not have remembered me from that career fair, but in that case, what was important is he didn't have a negative impression of me. I might not have blown him away with how awesome I am, but that wasn't working against me. You always want to be working to make a positive impression. For that matter, you always want to be working, even when you're looking for a job, to help other people look for a job. Because you never know when your network is going to come from, when it will grow, and how it will grow. I don't know how many times I did case study practice with other people in my graduate program and all the programs in our area, looking for consulting jobs and helping each other out. We were always giving each other tips of where we could all find a job. Even though it's a job that maybe I'm also interested in applying to, if my friend Dan needs some help, I'm going to tell him about it as well. I use Dan's specific name. Dan and I often still be friends today. And it's because you have this open honesty. It's not going to necessarily help you to try to hoard contacts and information to yourself, but sharing it will help. A, because it's the right thing to do, and B, because you're going to get a sounding board, somebody to talk to, one of your peers, that will give you their impressions and their ideas. So definitely help out with that. So I started at DR as an analyst. I've worked my way up to a product director, so it's director now, which is a few steps up. Jason is our chief operating officer now. He's done pretty well as well. And in the process between being an analyst and where I am now, I have had the opportunity to review applicants for Decision Resources and health leaders in your study as well. So I want to give you a few tips, if you will, for what I've seen in successful applicants that you might keep in mind. I think these tips will be more general and more broad to any type of job you're interested in. They certainly apply to us. The number one most important thing that the most common thing for people to mess up in an application to DR is that they have no demonstrated business experience or interest. I only had one thing, and that was this course at the business school. But that was so much more than the majority of people. You might be interested in making some big transition. And sometimes you just have to do it because there's no way to get experience. But if there's any way to get experience, you really should try. If that means taking a class, auditing a class, doing an internship, yeah, internship with all your free time in grad school, right? Anything you can do to get something, it will make you stand out in that field. Because it says that you know what you're getting into. It tells the employer that this is not somebody who's necessarily going to just turn a coat and run 6 months from now after you train them up because they're scared and they didn't really want to get into it. It's really important. A close second thing that people mess up, your resume and cover letter or CV and cover letter have to be perfect. Zero grammar, zero spelling mistakes. There's no excuse for it. You should know your audience as well. I've seen 8-page CVs get sent to me. To be honest, they don't get a second look. If it's got a spelling mistake in it, if the formatting's ugly, it doesn't get a second look. People in business, at least, have just not enough time You have to get it right the first time. And as far as a company is concerned, an employer is concerned, you have an infinite amount of time to get your resume up to date. There's no excuse for having it be wrong. It doesn't need to be a work of art, especially the cover letter, although I've seen some gorgeous, very well-written ones. But it needs to be clear and succinct and tell them why you're interested, why you'd be a good fit for the company, meaning why the company wants you, and why you want to work for the company, especially in the cover letter. That absolutely has to be perfect. Depending on where you're applying, if you're applying to DR, we have a ton of PhDs, so we'll be able to understand your level of achievement, especially academic achievement. If you're here, it's because you're successful already academically, so you want to highlight that. Just where you went to school isn't enough, but if you have something else, maybe a grant or a really big presentation you gave at a national conference or a couple of big papers, whatever it might be, you want to highlight that. If the person you're sending your resume to doesn't understand it, that's fine. You didn't lose anything. But if the person is from your background, you might have gained huge. At a company like ours that hires proximally, so adjacent to graduate schools or any consulting firm, for instance, or anybody recruiting right out of graduate school, they're going to see a lot of these applications, and they'll have people that know how to read those applications and those resumes or CVs. So that's important as well. Likewise, if you have any leadership experience, I would definitely bring that out because leaders are just leaders. It's just something that sort of is with you or it's not, and it's not necessarily a bad thing if you don't have it, but if you do have it, it tells the person something else about you. Through your application, I would definitely say persistence is pretty valuable. Let's give you one recent caveat that we had. We were hiring for a position, and somebody had sent me an email with her resume, and I just totally dropped the ball, didn't look at it. Completely my bad, I should have, but I didn't. I was busy. She followed up a few weeks later and said, hey, have you gotten a chance to look at it? And I thought, oh, well, no, I guess not. I felt kind of guilty, to be honest. And so I went back and looked at her resume, and we brought her in for an interview. And she actually made it all the way. We have three rounds of interviews. It's actually a pretty tough process. She made it all the way to the final round, and she wouldn't have gotten that at all had she not been persistent and politely persistent. I should emphasize that, polite persistence. That got her there. As it turns out, timing and luck play a large part in finding a job. We had three applicants, all of whom were extremely well qualified for this position. We could only hire one, so the job went to somebody else. But that doesn't, you know, that applicant might not feel today that that persistence necessarily helped, but she has no idea how much it did, because getting down to 1 in 3 is pretty good in the final stages. So I would definitely be persistent and keep working your network as politely as you can. And then probably one of the biggest lessons that I've learned is just about timing. It's a better part of luck, and there's not much you can do about it sometimes. When I wanted to apply for a DR consulting role, it wasn't there. It's no fault of my own. That's just the way the timing is. You could apply for a job at DR today, and maybe that job's not open. 6 months from now, it is open, and maybe by then you had to move somewhere else. And there's just nothing you can do about that. It's fickle, and it can be very emotionally tough when you're looking for a job and you're thinking all these thoughts about, oh, how am I going to pay the bills, especially if you're like the sole breadwinner in your household, and you're thinking, oh, my God, it's how are we going to pay these bills now? These other people counting on me. Try to keep your head up when timing doesn't fall your way. If you're here, you already have something going for you. Even if you want to make a big change, you already have incredible assets. People will want to hire you. It's just a matter of timing, and sometimes it's just a matter of luck. And that's not a reflection on you. So definitely try to stay positive. I know that, I believe that they're giving out slides. Don't read these. I just talked about this. So if you miss something, the slide, I have some lessons up there that hopefully I hit all my points. And with that, I will thank you for your time and attention.